Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet. And Prashanthi Nilayam has been witnessing beautiful showers last 48 hours. This divine valley has become really cool. It's wet and fresh. It's green and serene as always. Those who have been living in this temple town know how it always used to shower during the time of Dasara. Once the Yajnam begins, the Dasara showers from above would also start, and this year it's continuing. The Dasara Yajnam is over and nature continues to bless this hamlet with lovely blessings from atop. As a result, River Chitravati flows and so does the hearts of devotees, overflowing with love and gratitude for Bhagwan. In fact, I must also share with you that the Ganga Aarti in Chitravati has been going on every week. Today is the sixth week in succession when many devotees, staff and students assembled on these holy sands to pay their obeisance to Mother Chitravati and those blessed, blessed sands which have witnessed, which have been a part of the Leela Parva of the Satya Sai Avatar Gatha. And in the midst of all this happening in Prashanthi Nilayam, just last Sunday, a landmark day passed by, October 20th, the day the Divine decided to part the veil and reveal His identity to the world more than 7 decades ago. I am Sai, I am going, I have my work to do, my devotees are waiting for me. All these declarations by the young Satyanarayan Raju happened on October 20th. 1940, and from then on began the unfolding of the grand mission of the Satya Sai Avatar. In fact, the students of Bhagwan's University along with a few former students presented an insightful program on this day, October 20th, 2013 in the Sai Kulwant Hall. It started with reliving the beautiful days of the Lord's advent, the Avatarana Parva, and then moving on to the Leela Parva, the phase of His life when Swami stunned and stupefied all with His mind-boggling miracles, just like Lord Krishna did in His childhood. And from there on, the program moved on to the Upadesha Parva, the phase where Bhagwan started delivering public discourses, urging one and all to make their lives God-centered and transform their hearts. And finally came the Anugraha Parva, where Bhagwan's compassion took the shape of mammoth missions of educare, healthcare, social care and so on. So this is what the students presented last Sunday, October 20th, 2013. And there were dialogues, there were songs, there are lovely videos, there are powerful audio clips of Swami. So let me just give you a small glimpse of this program. Just a 3-minute glance of how this program went about last Thursday. This song was during the Avatarana Parva, where you... Okay, so this song is during the Leela Parva, where, you know, the Swami is born and Mother Ishwarama is wondering whether he is Govinda, he is the real Krishna, or who is he. And the previous song, I was telling you, was on the Shiva Shakti Tandava.
Sudatula Sai Baba.
So this was the program on Avatar Declaration Day in Prashantinilayam, October 20th, 2013. And I must add here that this program had really lovely video clips, as I mentioned, which were played on the screen as the songs were being sung. So dear listeners, if you missed watching this live, you may want to see this video from the video archives of our website. It will soon be up on radiosai.org. And when one reflects on that momentous day, and the incidents related to it, the Avatar Declaration Day, one is always thrilled, because that day when Swami returned from school and threw his books and said, "This is all Maya, everything is Maya, I am going," Swami's sister-in-law, as well as the father of another boy who studied with young Satya, Narasimha Das, both of them concur how they saw a brilliant light around him that day. In fact, to Narasimha Das's father, Swami said, "I am not your Satyam," because he came running and he asked Satyam, "My dear child, what is the matter?" And Swami said, "I am not your Satyam. I am Baba. I have to live for Vishwa Shanti, for the welfare of mankind. Allow me to do my work." This is what Swami said. And even as Swami uttered these words, this elderly man simply prostrated at the feet of young Sai, because he was stunned seeing the halo around his form. And soon after this declaration, another revealing incident happened. And an elderly lady approached the young Sai in the midst of all this entire hubbub. And the moment Baba saw her, he beckoned her near and spoke to her in Hindi, a tongue hardly spoken in these parts of Andhra Pradesh then. And Swami told her, "My child, at last you have arrived." Now imagine a 14-year-old telling an elderly lady, "My child, you have finally arrived." But to that elderly lady, it was not the small boy speaking. The voice and tone, she says, were as it used to be in Shirdi. She remembered her time with Shirdi Sai. Now only the form looked younger, she says. Although everything else remained the same except the face. In fact, she was born the daughter of a Shirdi Baba devotee who was a collector in the Nijam's dominion. And Shirdi Sai himself had named her Sharada. And she started visiting Shirdi Sai when she was just 3 years old. And in one of her visits to Shirdi, she had sought the boon of spiritual liberation from Baba, and Swami indeed, Shirdi Sai indeed had given her promise upon oath that she would not reveal it to anyone until the time came. And at that moment, Shirdi Sai had indeed made the historic declaration to her. This is what Baba had said: "I will be reborn in Andhra and you will then stay with me forever." So that happened in 1917, a year before Sai Baba of Shirdi left his body. And she later set up an orphanage called Sai Sadan. And during one of her fundraising campaigns for her orphanage, she was near Uruvakonda. And that is where someone told her of Raju, the boy who claimed to be Sai Baba of Shirdi, and she was drawn to Swami. And the moment she met this mysterious young Sai, and when Baba spoke to her in Hindi, her mind became absolutely calm. But the story does not end there. What young Sai does next is, he stretches his hand and says, "Let me have the balance of 16 rupees you owe me." And the lady is completely puzzled. What is the 16 rupees balance? I am seeing him for the first time. And then young Sai says, "Don't you remember, saving for the Dasara festival at Shirdi, you lent only 40 rupees out of it once to Balaram for the celebrations. Do you remember? The balance due to me is 16 rupees. Is this not simple arithmetic?" Young Sai asks her, "Yes, this is simple arithmetic according to the divine, but to her it was entirely, completely zapping, because the ways of the avatar are complex." And the lady immediately exclaimed, "Oh my God, who could ever remember such a small, trivial thing even after such a long time, except Baba himself?" And the moment this realization dawned on her, Swami smiled, blessed her and said, "I don't need your money. I recall this only to assure you and reassure you of my Shirdi identity, so that you develop trust in me." This is what Bhagwan revealed. In fact, in years to come, Sharada, who later came to be known as Sharada Ma or Shirdi Amma or Peddabottu Amma, she settled down in Puttaparthi and stayed here, just as Bhagwan had promised her in Shirdi Avatar, "You will stay with me forever." She spent her entire life after knowing Swami in Puttaparthi until her last breath in 1986. Therefore, like this began the process of transformation of hearts, and Swami continued to shock, shake and suffuse the hearts of his devotees with devotion and trust, faith, so that they become ready to assimilate his message. And his message started in a formal, organized manner from 1947. That is when he made his first public speech. And today, one estimate says that there are over 3,000 discourses given by Bhagwan in all these years. Of course, these are formal discourses, and if you take into account all the informal interactions, all the sessions that Swami used to have with boys, the interviews, I mean the number of directions that have emanated from those divine lips is innumerable. And each of it is a pearl. Of course, we do not have even records of all of these 3,000 discourses, formal discourses that Bhagwan has given. But what we have got is itself so profound. We probably have got half of them. But even that is so profound and so immense in its spectrum and content. When you hear him now, you feel like preserving every word he has uttered and pouring over it again and again to purify your life. And the more you dwell on them, the more insights you continue to gain. It keeps giving you newer and newer meanings, just like what the Bhagavad Gita does to you. And dear listeners, today this is what we are going to do. We are going to take just three words that Swami has uttered so many times in his discourses and try to assimilate their essence. So it is going to be an episode of Radio Sai Study Circle, the session that we have with brothers from the university, which is moderated by Sri Rangarajan sir, the controller of examinations of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. But before we get on with this program, let us first pause and offer our most reverential salutations at the lotus feet of our Divine Master. Dear Lord, please bless us with that determination and willpower which will enable us to walk on this path laid down by you and live up to your expectations. With this prayer, Let's move on and welcome dear listeners to this session of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And today, as I told you, we're going to have Radio Sai Study Circle. I'm Team Radio Sai's Vishu, and the time in the studios now is 8:50. And in this discussion, which I'm going to play for you, this is the first part of Radio Sai Study Circle, which we recorded just 2 weeks ago in the studio. And as I told you, Sri Rangarajan sir from the university is the moderator. And apart from me, the other brothers joining, participating in this discussion are Amay, Sai Giridhar and K.M. Ganesh. So here is the first part of this new Radio Sai Study Circle. What is the topic? Well, I'm not going to reveal that to you now. I've given you a hint, but let's move on. You will enjoy it.
Sarva-prachodayat Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to a fresh episode of Radio Sai Study Circle. This is the 10th session in this series, and till now we have covered several topics. In the initial episodes of this program, we deliberated elaborately on a couple of Bhagwan's Chinna Kathas, and then we moved on to discussing the principle of love and its many hues. In subsequent sessions, we ruminated on how to convert work into worship and how and when can we say that we truly love Swami and not just like Swami. And then the 8th and 9th study circle sessions focused on Bhagwan's beautiful and insightful anecdotes and examples, and the profound teachings in them conveyed through such simple stories and tales directly from Bhagwan. And today we move on to a topic which has confounded man for generations. And this concept is perhaps as mysterious as the Creator himself. So that is what we are going to discuss today, but I'm not going to reveal that to you, because I will leave that to the moderator of this session, Mr. G.S. Rangarajan, to take the session forward. But before that, I would like to pause and offer our grateful and prayerful salutations to Swami for making this happen yet another time. It is surely His grace that we are here in the studio today together to ruminate on His timeless messages. And to all of you, dear listeners, our heartfelt gratitude too for your continuous flow of encouraging words and suggestions which have come via email and as well as through various other media, formal and informal communications. And all of this have definitely propelled us to pray to Bhagwan to enable us to do whatever it takes to make this program happen. So a big thank you to all of you. I know you are eager to hear the topic for today's discussion, and I request Rangarajan sir to take it over.
Sai Ram, brothers.
Sam, sir.
This is a discourse I had heard Bhagwan giving in Kodaikanal, and again in 1996, Bhagwan referred to the same theme in his discourse in the Mandir, where basically Bhagwan says that God created the entire universe with all the pleasures and all the conveniences that human being would ever need. And He gave full freedom for man to enjoy all these pleasures. And then Bhagwan goes on in a very elaborate way, and it's very interesting to hear Swami Himself tell us this. So why don't we first listen to Bhagwan in His own voice, an excerpt from this discourse where Bhagwan Himself will introduce the theme to us.
Wonderful.
Ee sundaramaina, ee andamaina, ee aadhunikamaina, ఈ అమూల్యమైన ఈ అపురూపమైన ఈ ప్రపంచము చూచుటకు ఎంతయో ఆనందంగా ఉంటున్నది, అందంగా ఉంటున్నది.
దిస్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ హైలీ వాల్యుబుల్ వరల్డ్ విల్ మేక్ అస్ విల్ టేక్ అస్ టు ఎ బ్లిస్ఫుల్ స్టేట్.
నేచర్ ఈజ్ బ్యూటీ.
నేచర్ ఈజ్ బ్యూటీ.
ఈ ప్రపంచమునందు పంచభూతములు మొదలుకొని పంచ ప్రాణములు మొదలుకొని పంచకోశములు మొదలుకొని పంచేంద్రియముల వరకు కూడాను సర్వస్త శక్తులతో కూడినటువంటిది ఈ మానవ జీవితము.
హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్ హ్యాస్ ఆల్ ద ఫ్యాకల్టీస్ అండ్ ద పవర్ ఆర్ ద ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ ఫైవ్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్ ఫైవ్ లైఫ్ షీట్స్ అండ్ ద పవర్ ఆఫ్ ఫైవ్ సెన్సెస్.
మానవుడు తెల్లవారి మొదలుకొని రాత్రి పరుగున్నంత వరకు కూడాను అనుభవించవలసినటువంటి యొక్క ఆనందములకు సంబంధించినటువంటి సమస్త వస్తువులు కూడాను ఈ ప్రపంచం నందు మనకు తిక్కుచున్నవి.
రైట్ ఫ్రమ్ డాన్ టు డస్క్, రైట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద టైమ్ వి గెట్ అప్ ఫ్రమ్ ద బెడ్ అండ్ గో బ్యాక్, దేర్ ఇస్ లాట్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ దట్ గివ్స్ అస్ ఆల్ ది హ్యాపీనెస్.
ఈ ప్రపంచం నందు దొరకనటువంటిది ఒక్కటి కూడాను లేదు, సర్వములు చిక్కుతాయి.
In this world, you get everything. There's nothing that you find in want of.
Matti modalu manikyam varaku sarva vidhamainatvanti yokka saukaryamulanu chekurcheetvanti sadupayamulu kudanu bhagavantudu nirminchi manavulaku andistu aanandinchamani prabodhistu vastunnadu.
God has gifted. He wants us to be very happy. He gave us right from the mud to the a diamond. He gave us all sorts of convenience and comfort.
Manavuniki sarva swatantramulu kodanu andinchadu.
God gave us independence of all sorts.
Ee visha srishtinantai kodanu manavuni yokka swadhinam parichadu.
He gave us the whole world of the creation.
Ee vishwamunandu ee drishyagochiramainatundi jagattunandu manavudu aashinchina anni kodanu etti parimitamu lekunda anubhavinchavachchu.
In this apparent conspicuous world, you can enjoy, you can make use of any material beyond all limits.
దీనికి ఏమాత్రము భయపడనక్కర్లేదు.
You don't need to fear.
కుంగనక్కర్లేదు, పొంగనక్కర్లేదు.
You don't need to be extolled nor frustrated.
ఇష్టమొచ్చినటువంటి మార్గంలో నీవు ప్రవేశించి ఇష్టమొచ్చినటువంటి కర్మలు ఆచరించి ఇష్టమొచ్చినటువంటి పనులు నువ్వు చేసుకోవచ్చు.
You can act as for your likes and dislikes, whims and fancies.
సమస్తము భగవత్ యొక్క సృష్టియే.
Everything is God's creation.
భగవంతుడు సృష్టించి సమస్త సృష్టిని కూడాను జీవ మొదలు బ్రహ్మ వరకు కూడాను మానవునికి సర్వ హక్కులు కూడాను అందిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
Creator created this creation and gave from end to Brahman.
దేనిని భగవంతుని యొక్క ఆజ్ఞ కోసం కాచుకోనక్కర్లేదు.
Nothing needs to wait for God's command.
ఇది సృష్టి యొక్క శాసనం.
This is the command of nature, law of nature.
ఎవరికి ఏది ఇష్టమో, ఎవరికి ఏ మార్గము నచ్చుతుందో ఆ మార్గంలో ప్రవేశించవచ్చు, ఆ ఇష్టమును నెరవేర్చుకుని ఆనందాన్ని అనుభవించవచ్చు.
యూ కెన్ ప్రొసీడ్ ఇన్ ద వే యూ లైక్, ద టెంపర్మెంట్ సూట్స్ యూ అండ్ డిరైవ్ హ్యాపీనెస్ దేర్ బై.
కానీ
బట్
భగవంతుడు ఒక్క నియమాన్ని మాత్రము నియమించాడు.
హౌఎవర్ గాడ్ మేడ్ వన్ స్టిప్యులేషన్ రెగ్యులేషన్.
మీరు అనుభవించవలసిన దాన్ని అనుభవించవచ్చు.
యూ కెన్ ఎంజాయ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఆల్ యూ వాంట్.
అయితే అది మంచి కాని చెడ్డ కాని,
వెదర్ గుడ్ ఆర్ బ్యాడ్,
అది పవిత్రం కాని అపవిత్రం కాని,
సీక్రెట్ ఆర్ అన్సీక్రెట్,
అది నిత్యము కాని సత్యము కాని,
మేబీ ఇటర్నల్ ఆర్ వన్ ఆఫ్ ట్రూత్,
కానీ అనుభవించినటువంటి దాని యొక్క ఫలితమును మీరు తిరిగి అందుకోక తప్పదు.
You are bound to face the consequences of your actions.
కనుక ఈ యొక్క విషయాన్ని దృష్టి అందుంచుకొని మానవుడు ఎట్టి కర్మలు ఆచరించాలి, ఎట్టి మార్గంలో ప్రవేశించాలి, ఎట్టి చర్యలు మనం చేయాలి అనేటువంటి యొక్క దీనిని మీరే నిర్ణయించుకోవాలి.
Keeping in view that we have to face the consequences of our actions, we should decide in which way we should tread. We should also decide what actions are to be undertaken.
Yetti vittulu natiro atti phalamu.
As is the seed, so is the fruit you reap.
Vittanam ettido phalam attido.
As is the seed, so is the
reward.
As is the action, so is the reward.
So as Bhagwan said and we heard, man is free to do anything in this world, but Bhagwan cautions that for every action, there will be a reaction. Reaction, reflection and resound. That is the theme for today's discussion. We have heard Bhagwan talking about the 3 R's a number of times, which actually essentially communicates to us the concept of LOK. Not the line of control, but the law of karma. In fact, law of karma is also in a way a line that controls our life and says you better not cross this boundary. So what is this mysterious law that governs every act of ours in this creation and which is so enigmatic and which, as Bishu has mentioned in the beginning, has put every mind to work, and it is something which is so complicated to understand. So first let's try to spend some time in just introducing this concept and trying to gain some understanding about it. Amay, can you elaborate a little more on this based on what Bhagwan has said? Can you give a different perspective to it?
Yes, sir. In fact, when you talked about these 3 R's, you know, what really governs a whole lot of the world today in the 3 R's when we talk about is, you know, reduce, reuse and recycle. You reduce your usage, you reuse whatever you can, and then you recycle. So in fact, you know, this 3 R's in Bhagwan's terminology or in spirituality can be called as reflection, resound and reaction. And the other analogy that I'm reminded of is oftentimes, you know, whenever we have seen this beginning of a movie or, you know, how the director starts the whole scene, he always starts with a sound, light, action, and then, you know, the whole thing starts. And in many ways, these 3 words, sound, light and action, are in fact what has created this entire universe also. So probably the divine director, when he was creating the universe, started with these 3 words and, you know, the Big Bang started.
Okay.
You know, light, action and sound.
Yeah.
And the moment these 3 started, along with it came, you know, the reply for that. So for sound, there was resound. For action, there was reaction. And for light, there was reflection.
Oh, that's
so
a nice
probably,
way of putting it.
Yeah, they're probably
it's
three
inbuilt into the design of
exactly. Creation. So if there is a universe, there are these 3 R's.
And definitely, this whole universe is just a play
exactly.
of the divine. And so basically, what we are seeing, as you mentioned, is just resound, reaction, and reflection of the original light, sound, and action of the divine.
But in a way, when we hear Swami telling us, you know, it actually sends a sort of, you know, we feel a little frightened because Swami so categorically says that there is no escape from the reaction to every action that we do. So how do we really understand this law of karma? If every action had a reaction, then why is it that we are not able to comprehend this? In fact, Bhagwan says that there are 3 different ways in which a reaction can occur. He says there are some actions where the reaction comes instantly. For example, you fall, and let's say the fall is very intense and your bone breaks. So that's an immediate reaction. Or a needle pricks into a finger and instantly you find the blood coming out. Now these are cases where the action reaction is instant and therefore there is no sense of suspense or mystery in it. The second level is wherein there is some time lag between the action and reaction. So Bhagwan gives the example of food. We eat food today. It takes a few hours to digest and then we pass it out as waste material. So at least there is a little time gap. You take still a third example of, let's say we sow a mango seed and we may have to wait for several years before the seed becomes a gigantic tree and starts yielding fruits again. So Bhagwan says in the same way, every action that we do in life has a reaction, has a resound, has a reflection, but the mystery comes into this whole concept because of the time lag. We never know when a particular reaction for an action that we have done actually would come back to us, in what way it would come back to us, from which instrument it would come back to us, and this is what creates, you know, a lot of suspense, and one is never able to understand why I'm going through something today and what was the cause for this.
Yes.
So this cause effect cycle is really not clear at all, but as Bhagwan says, this is a very accurate design of creation. It is there in the blueprint. This is the law which is actually operating. Now, this is where many people tend to misunderstand this as a fatalistic approach to life. They say because of law of karma, people tend to feel anyhow everything is destined. Every action has a reaction. There's nothing you can do about it. And therefore, they sort of become diffident. So maybe we should spend a little time on this. Ganesh, do you think this approach to destiny and this approach to life is correct? A fatalistic approach?
No, it's not correct. Because one thing we have to understand as human beings, that's a gift of being a human being, is this understanding that what happens to us is destiny. But how we take that destiny, what we do with that destiny is in our hand. How we face it. That is where we are different from any other species which are there, which exist here.
To put it differently, what happens to us is fate, but what we make of it is destiny.
Destiny.
We create our own destiny.
That's where the role of Purushartha.
In fact, Ganesh, what you're saying is what we meet in life is destiny, but how we meet it is self-effort. And Bhagwan has always stressed on that aspect of self-effort.
Self-effort. That's what is Purushartha. And like one of the popular motivational speakers, Stephen Covey, he puts it very nicely. If there is a stimulus, there has to be a reaction. But the difference comes when you decide a response to it. That's why we say we should have a responsibility. We have the ability to respond. And that's where the responsibility of us as human being is. How we face it is in our hand.
You mean consciously respond to it but not react to it?
Yeah, to that also many people have an issue. They say we are a product of our conditioning, which is our childhood conditioning. Now, even our response is conditioned based on our condition. So, where is the solution? That is one of the issues, very burning issues. And many people say that, okay, we understand it intellectually. But how I react is based on the feelings and the way I've been brought up. How do I work on myself? So, this is one very important point that we have to.
So, would it not be possible for a human being to recondition?
It is very much possible.
Himself?
That's where we are separate from other species.
I think to get this understanding going, the first step is to learn this lesson, which Swami says, is, you know, the present is the seed of the tree of past. Okay. And it is the seed of the tree of the future also. Which means, Swami says, in the present, both past and the future coexist. That is why the present is most important.
Right.
Instead of brooding over the past and saying, I had such and such conditioning, I was not brought up well, or whatever, you know, complaints that we have. Swami says, look at the present moment and see that, fine, whatever has happened in the past has led me to this point. But what I'm going to do now is what is going to decide my future. Right? So Swami says, keep all your focus on the present, on the now, so that you can work on it really well. And that will script a beautiful future for all of us. So the present really is a seed which has got the tree both from the past and the future.
I think that's a very positive approach to the law of karma.
You are a choice maker of your life.
You are the choice maker.
One of the questions, you know, that comes in our discussion is, why did Swami use these three words? You know, why was reaction not enough? Why the words resound and reflection? Or was reflection not enough? So, even while we were discussing, I think why we need these three words is also quite important. Probably, you know, if you look at anything by which we want to identify in this universe, we either need name, we need its form, and also we need to define in its position in time. Right? So these are the three dimensions which actually define any entity in the universe. So for example, if I were to say, I'm just giving you, if I were to say something like Bugha, you'll say, what is it, Bugha? Right? So I show you a form and say, that is Bugha. I'm just giving a very crude example here. So we always go by name, form, and then because it exists either now or 10 years back it existed, or probably in the future it will exist. So again, you know, time.
Dimension of time.
Dimension. So I think these three, which is namely reflection, reaction and resound, I think cater to these three. That is, you know, when there is a form, there is a reflection. When there is name, which is sound, there is a resound. And when there is time, it is reaction, because reaction happens
so
in a particular time.
Everything intrinsically has these three attributes.
These three, and probably that is why Swami gave us these three
reaction, reflection.
Yeah, reaction, sound. Reflection.
And you know, as you use the word probably, because perhaps we can never understand why Swami
there could
should
be so
always,
many different reasons.
Exactly.
For it, yeah.
I think we can perhaps only think to ourselves and reflect and see what other meaning we can derive of.
True.
Why Swami used all these three words together. And one other thought that comes to my mind is a set of another three words that Swami used to use. Thought, word and deed. And if you think deeply, actually, you know, in some ways you can actually juxtapose these two together.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you take word. Word is basically sound.
So there's resound, right?
There's resound. Whatever, you know, whatever emanates always has a resound. And that is the reason why, you know, Bhagwan laid so much emphasis on the word. He said, Shabda Brahma Mai, you know, word itself is God. And he always mentioned that, you know, Satyam Bruyat Priyam.
Speak Bruyat, softly, speak nicely,
pleasantly. You know, even if it is truth, unpleasant truth.
Don't say it.
Yeah, don't say it. Truth, Na Bruyat Satyam Apriyam. You know, even if it is a truth, but if it is not going to be pleasant, don't say it.
Better to keep silent.
So I think that is so much, so important there. So you have this connection here of sound and word. So next we come to deed. Now deed is so much related to action. And every action has a reaction. And we all know about the physical law of the universe. And I intuitively feel that, you know, if there is such a law for the physical universe that everything has an equal and opposite reaction, definitely there is something in the metaphysical universe.
At the macro level,
and,
yes.
And there are so many examples to tell us through so many people's experiences. And in fact, there are so many instances where Swami has also directly mentioned how this reaction in the metaphysical plane happens in a much more magnified way. We will not go into those stories, but I think we all know of so many instances where whatever happens, you get back. It happens in the physical universe, it happens in the metaphysical universe. So you have deed and action reaction. And finally, thought. Thought is so much reflection. Because yes. I think the most powerful thing in this universe is thought.
You know, Swami says everything is a reflection of the inner being.
Inner being.
So it's our thought which is actually reflecting everything around us.
Everything around us. And that is the most powerful thing in the universe which can make or mar you. And as you mentioned, everything that happens is a reflection of inner being. And whenever I think of this, what comes to mind is Swami himself, you know. We have seen so many instances where, for example, one student has gone, presented to Swami a card requesting for a music program or requesting him for a chance, you know. Swami would react in one particular way. And the next day, another student takes the same card and Swami would react in a totally different way. And what I'm trying to say is, we saw in Swami live examples of reflection of inner being.
You know, Swami always used to say, I'm typically a mirror and I will just reflect what you are.
Yes.
That's the same reaction.
The best way to describe Swami is these three words, reflection, reaction, resound. He was all the time reflecting so that, you know, to help us grow. And I think that is one way of looking at it. You know, thought, word and deed, you juxtapose with reaction, reflection, resound.
Yeah, but having understood this, it sounds so simple, right? But still it has baffled people since ages. And somehow there's a very bitter connotation to this law of karma. You know, one always feels it's unjust. You know, how can God be like this? And if I'm facing the consequences of some action, why do I not know what is the action for which I'm facing the consequences today? Say I'm born blind. Now, do you mean to say this is a consequence of something I did in my past, assuming I had a past life? Then why do I not know it? But I think we need to understand the law of karma in a positive way, very objectively, and in a very intellectual way. It's basically a balancing principle. Just like an electron or an atom cannot stay in an unbalanced state, in the same way, once you let out an action in creation, there has to be something that counters it, equal and opposite force, which balances the energy. So if understood in this way, anything that a human being does, be it good or be it bad, has to have an effect. So for example, I hurt somebody. The best punishment that I could get possibly is not going to jail, or is not, you know, being subjected to capital punishment, but the possibly, just we should think about it, the best punishment could be go through the same pain which I have caused to the other person. And possibly this is how law of karma works, that if you cause a particular type of injury or harm, be it through thought or word or deed, through any other being in this universe, the best way for our own mind to understand what impact I have made on the other person is to be subject to the same pain. That actually is a law of karma. But the only problem, as you have seen, is the time lag. You never know when it comes, how it comes, in which situation, in which circumstance it comes. So I think if understood in this way, law of karma truly is a very just and a very fair.
And I think it's a very scientific.
And a very scientific thing that's actually maintaining balance in this universe, and that which makes the mind understand what it ought to do, what it ought not to do, or what, if it does, what is the consequence?
I can just add, I think it's a great leveler in many ways.
It's a great leveler, yes.
You know, it kind of, you stop judging yourself, you stop judging anybody in this universe, because what he must have done, what he is gaining today, we have no idea. We are not capable of. So it becomes like a great leveler, because at some point of time you may have done something great.
Yes.
You don't get the immediate benefits of it. At the same time, you may have done something bad. You know, so
we can very easily get out of this victim syndrome.
True. And one may say it's convenient philosophy. That's one way of looking at it. But, you know, this is one theory which very clearly brings in an explanation for the reality that you are facing in the world.
In fact, Swami gives a very beautiful example. He narrates about two families and the postman.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami says, there is this postman who delivers a letter in one house, and immediately after that, in that house, everyone is jubilant. They're all celebrating. And the same postman, he gives another letter in another house, and immediately when they open and read the contents of the letter, they are into depression. They are all lamenting and crying there.
It could be death of somebody.
Anything.
Or
it could
some
be.
Mishap.
Now, you know, what generally happens is, it would be so wrong to ascribe the reactions of these two families to the postman.
That would be ridiculous.
It would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think that is what we engage in most of the time. And that is what is victim syndrome. You know, we ascribe it to the postman. Where here we say, okay, it is God who gave them happiness, or it is God who gave them
troubles.
And we
blame God for all the things.
But when you look at it, it's only the letter. What God did, or what the postman did here, he just only delivered to them whatever was due to them. And I think that sort of sums up, in one way, very beautifully, Swami is telling us that whatever you get is what you are meant to receive.
And it's a blueprint of creation. It's not that God is physically delivering it, but that's the way the creation is designed.
Yes.
That for every action, reaction comes to you. So whom do we blame?
Yeah.
I think there's nobody else to blame other than we ourselves.
In fact, a very small incident, very, very, very beautiful incident comes to my mind. This happened many years ago to a student before he joined Bhagwan's university. He was studying that time. He was about to apply to the college, and he had just been introduced to Swami. So, you know, there were introduced to Swami and to God. So all those questions used to come in his mind. Why there is suffering in this world? You know, why there is poverty? All those questions. And he had been to a devotee's house, and the lady of that house gave me a photograph. And as he was looking at that photograph, he had just known Swami a few weeks ago. Just in front of his eyes, he saw that Bhagwan's letters, Bhagwan's signature started appearing on that photograph. He was actually stunned to see, you know, with love and blessings Sri Satisai just appearing in front of his eyes. So he was startled. And when he turned that picture, on the rear side of that, it was postcard size photograph. It was written, God is a postman.
So he's confirmed his role as the postman.
That really answered all the questions that he had as a youngster.
And in fact, I think religion itself in many ways, you know, helps us to understand this. You know, that's why most of the religions, it starts with basically papa bhiti, if I can say so. You know,
fear of sin. It prescribes all those punishments, is it not?
In some, with a lot of description, you know, a very detailed and vivid
you
description.
You will go to hell, and then, you know, you'll be boiled in oil. You have all these things in our
like
scriptures,
Garuda,
right?
Puran.
Yes. But is this all true, or is it a way to caution man not to do the wrong thing?
You know, when man is taking these baby steps,
yes,
he needs to, just like you need to tell a child, you know, don't do this. If you do this, the mother tells the child that you better not do this, otherwise, you know, you will get spankings.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the child definitely understands as it grows that why the mother is doing it, and it is out of its love. And therefore, the Daiva Priti part comes, that it is actually my love
for God,
for
which
God,
should
which should
drive
the
fear of sin.
Yes. And in fact, I think these religions also have a very different, you know, cultural perspective or a philosophical ideology from which different religions come. I'm reminded of a very interesting analogy which one Mr. Devdutt Patnaik gave in one of the TED Talks, a very interesting TED Talk. He says that when Alexander the Great was conquering the entire world, and he reaches India, and he reaches the banks of Sindhu, the Indus, River Indus, he meets a yogi, you know, which is a famous story, and he asks the yogi, what are you doing? He sees the yogi, you know, completely naked and concentrating, sitting on a rock and, you know, just lost in meditation. And he says, what are you doing? And the monk says that I am contemplating on nothingness.
Nothingness.
On nothingness. And then the monk asks, what are you doing? And then he says, I am busy conquering the world. You know, and both laugh at each other.
You know? Like the two extreme ends of...
exactly. And Mr. Patnaik, he says, let us try to understand the relative truths from which both come. He says, Alexander came from that kind of a culture where you had one life. The Greeks believed that there was one life, and all the experiences of that life totaled up to one. And therefore, you should go about achieving every possible thing in one life, because you wouldn't get another chance. Whereas, you know, the Sanatana Dharma from which the monk came, believes in several, you know, lives, right? That you go past, it's punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. That cycle keeps going, and you really cannot achieve everything in one single life, because you're only going to get the fruits of that in the next life. Okay, and this is not going to end. And the only way you can actually come out of this cycle of birth and death is to become nothing, achieve nothing, realize nothing. Okay, and that is what is going to liberate you from this. So I think in many ways, you know, the religions and our philosophical ideologies have kind of shaped our way in which we look at these reaction, reflection and resound.
See, but one doubt still remains. If law of karma or reaction, reflection, resound was that blueprint of creation which ensured justice and fairness to everything and everybody, then the question that has always bothered people since ages is, why are bad things happening to good people? Or why do good things, you know, apparently always happen to bad people? How do we answer this?
Well, in this context, actually, one of the devotees had asked Swami, Swami, why is it that Mirabai, Sudama, Sakubai, all great devotees of yours, they had to go through so much of difficulties and all?
I think the list is on. Yeah, Pandavas and almost Pandavas, all the devotees of God, so much of suffering, so, pain.
Swami looked at him and said, did they come and tell you that they were having problems?
<That's a good laughs>
So, obviously the devotee was like startled. Then Swami said, no, that is what you think. But for them, when we say, why is it that bad things happen to good people, we have to understand, what we see as bad is not actually bad. For them, for the good people, being in the proximity of the Lord, okay, that is good. And what matters for them more is the inner happiness that we cannot perceive by a person's, the way he's living. So that is a superficial perception of a situation. And that's why we feel, okay, this karma theory is not perfect. And since people are doing bad are flourishing and people are doing good are like, they're left behind. And second perspective that we need to have is, for everything, there's something called a reaction time. A good person apparently may be going through a difficult phase, probably because of some karmic consequences in the earlier incarnations of that person. And a bad person apparently may be flourishing, maybe because of some good things, good activities or good actions that he had done in his previous birth. So one thing we should understand, have faith, is in the design of the
Creator.
So you
mean it's not sequential? The
it
action,
is not
reaction
sequential.
Is not. So action A may have its reaction sometime later. What you may be facing now is some other reaction of some action.
Absolutely.
So there is no apparent or consciously one cannot comprehend the sequence.
But one thing we have to understand and trust is whatever is happening is within the design of the Creator.
That's the bottom
so
line.
That faith will keep us equanimous.
And it's a consequence of what I have done. So I alone am to blame for what I am today. Is that what we mean?
Take the responsibility and be positive. And know for sure, every pain, every experience is for your growth. It's for your learning. If you have that perspective, then you'll grow in life.
In fact, as Ganesh was just mentioning about something maybe you've done in your previous births, influences your current situation, I'm reminded of an incident which happened in Dharmakshetra. Swami Karunanandaji, who was serving Bhagwan at one point of time, he was there in Dharmakshetra serving Bhagwan when Swami visited Bombay. And one day he just happened to peep out of the window and he saw few little street urchins who were picking up food from trash and, you know, and eating it. And he could not hold himself. He was literally trembling at that sight. And he ran to Swami and said, Swami, what is this? When you, the Annapurneshwari herself, is here, how can it be that these people are like, you know, picking up food from trash and eating? Swami said, see, you know, in their previous birth, these children were all very, very rich, well-to-do people. And none of them really respected the good fortune that they had. And they used to flaunt their wealth. And more importantly, they used to waste the food right royally, you know. And they never really cared about the food that they are wasting. And all that food that they put into trash, they have to pick it up from there and eat it again. So they had to take another birth for that and come in this birth like this street urchins. And they had to pick up the food right from where they had dropped it carelessly. you know. So Swami said this is a consequence, but of course we all know that Swami did go on and do Narayan Seva. And
we cannot expect Swami to tell us for every little incident that happens or that we see in our life, but Swami gives us this one or two examples for us to
show
realize
how actually the you know, the law operates.
Yes.
But Giridhar, this is confusing because if the present, as you said, is the seed of the past, now we are already bound by the past because the present is ultimately a function of the past. Now, the present again forces me to behave in a particular way, which will again invoke a reaction. And then this action-reaction goes on and on. So how do I really... So if what I am today is because of my destiny, so-called destiny, how do I face it? Especially when it has put me in situations which are not at all conducive. Which does not allow me to do good things, what we call as, you know, quote-unquote good things that can get me good fruits. What do I do?
I think, sir, this is where, you know, Swami gives, you know, he gives us the, what should I say, the blank check, mm-hmm. you know. He says, whatever you are meeting in life is destiny,
right.
But how you are going to meet it is self-effort.
Can you illustrate?
That is where, I think, that is the X factor, you know, in each one of our lives. For example, Swami gives the example of Dharma Vyada. Dharma Vyada is this legendary butcher, you know, and it seems when it is said that Narada wanted to understand the greatest science of self-realization from Brahma himself, Brahma said, not me, this Dharma Vyada will go and explain to you. You go to him, he will explain to you.
Mm-hmm.
And Narada, you know, the legendary saint who had access to all the gods, he was shocked. He says, how can you do this? How can a butcher explain to me the science of self-realization? And in fact, it is said that he went and he understood the entire science of self-realization from a butcher. And the whole understanding over there is, the Dharma Vyada was born as a butcher. He was born in a butcher's family. He was forced to take up that occupation. That was his destiny. But from there, he was able to consider that the action that he was doing as just that. Okay, and not, you know, keep brooding over it and thinking that, oh my God, I am in this and so I should... He was able to transcend his action, okay, and, you know, offer everything back to the Lord, you know, and therefore change that cycle from then on. So, it is in fact possible to move out of this negative loop that, you know, we may say that we are being put into this negative loop. So, it is possible. And, in fact, Dharma Vyada's example is a very powerful one.
You can elevate yourself.
Yes, yes. That is the X factor, the human effort.
You can cut the chains that really bind you and come out of it.
Yes, yes.
In fact, there is one more incident that Swami narrates. Swami says, once Buddha entered a village along with his disciples, a lady approached him and requested him to have food in her house. Buddha blessed her and accepted her invitation. Seeing this, many villagers, including the village headman, you know, they went up to Buddha and said, "Oh Buddha, you are the one of wisdom. You have renounced everything. She is not a woman of good character. Is it proper for you to have food in her residence?" You know, then Buddha smiles and he calls the village headman forward. And this is what he had to say. He held his right hand and said, "Now can you clap?" And obviously the village headman was not able to clap. And then Buddha says, "It is not possible to clap with only one hand. You need two hands to clap. In the same way, if you say that she is not a person of good character, it only reflects that the men in this village are not people of good character." So then Buddha actually goes to that house and partakes food in the house of that lady. But an offshoot of this story is, though the circumstance and the situation, whatever that may be, had brought her to that place and her profession, but still she utilized the present moments in her life to have sacred thoughts and think of, you know, something so noble as to offer food to Buddha, which none of the other people in the village entertained. You know, so Swami is saying that whatever be the consequence of your past action which has led to your present situation, however low or demeaned you might be in the present status in the society or in your own self-esteem, it doesn't matter. If you are ready to have develop sacred thoughts, if you are ready to improve your present moment, the future has to be beautiful for you.
In fact, Swami adds a little dimension to that. It seems the just next to her house is a temple where there is a priest. And the priest is feeling very jealous at how Buddha could go to her house and here he is spending all his time in the worship of God, he doesn't come. Then Buddha tells him, he said, just reflect on what you have been doing. All the time you were concerned about who is entering her house and who is going out of her house, though you were a priest yourself. Whereas she, though she was caught up in that, she was always thinking only about God. So as you rightly said, that though we may be caught up in destiny, which is a consequence of our past, we have every strength within us, every power within us that empowers us and gives us the freedom to break these shackles and create our new destiny.
As Bhagwan says, hands in the society, but you can keep your head in the forest.
You know, if I could just add in over here, I think it's a great, great, you know, opportunity for all of us, isn't it? That Swami has walked into our lives today. And we may find ourselves in any particular position, right, you know, where we find ourselves. But I think that's the greatest blessing that, you know, now that God has walked into, Buddha has walked into our lives, we have now this opportunity to change our lives forever. And if we keep saying that, oh no, I was born in this, or I was, you know, stuck up in that, but, you know, opportunity. I think we all have to be so thankful to Swami, so grateful to Bhagwan that, you know, He chose us.
But one thing is that still, see, it may be easy for us to tell like this. But when a person is really going through some problem, can we speak in this way? Because, you know, people often say that it's so difficult when you're actually going through it. How do we answer that question? Yeah, it's easy to speak like this, right? Yeah. So what when I'm really going through terrible problems, then how do I console myself?
Swami has given a very beautiful perspective for people who raise this point. Swami says that if there is difficulty in your life, if you're facing a lot of challenges, then you should be actually thankful to God. Why? Swami explains, when do you go through an exam? When you are eligible to?
Take the exam.
Or and get promoted.
Exactly. So, only after examination you are promoted. So, when you are facing a lot of challenges in your life, a lot of difficulties, it only the life is sending a message to you, is that here is a chance for you to promote yourself higher. So, you should be thankful if everything is going smooth. If there's no challenge, then there's something is wrong. Means you're unfit.
You're still in the middle of academic year.
You're unfit for promotion. And in fact, if you know how they select the fighting bulls,
the Spanish people,
there's a way in which they select the bulls. What they do is, when they have to select the best bull, whenever the bull charges towards the person who's holding the red cloth, the bull is pricked with an iron rod. Okay. Now, the bull which, in spite of the prick, again and again comes back, the maximum number of time is the best bull. Okay. That's how they select the bull. So, in life also for us, we'll get a lot of pricks. Okay. And most of us shy away from the situation, feeling the prick and we give up. But we should understand the prick is only to test our strength, inner strength. And one more perspective is that of a larva. If you see the larva, it is all bound from all direction.
Yes.
If the larva feels bad, okay, what is this that the God has made me like this? Okay, and if it remains in that position, in that state, it will never fly. Yeah. But in the effort of, you know, stretching out the wing, the blood rushes into the wing, it gives the strength, it expands the wing, and the very effort of stretching itself gives the strength to the wing, which is necessary for the butterfly to fly. So most of us are like larva. If we don't exercise our purushartha, then we are losing a great opportunity that life is giving us to grow and to fly.
In fact, you mentioned this, Ganesh, two thoughts come to my mind. One is, you mentioned about the larva example, and what came to your mind is how mother bird generally teach the little ones how to fly. You know, if you see how this happens in various species of birds, more often than not, you'll find various variations of this phenomenon, where the mother actually leaves the little one to unattended.
To fend for itself.
You know, there are some mothers who are sort of very harsh, who really just disappear from the scene. So the little one has to move, so it has no other option. It has to just, you know, otherwise it will fall down. And in that falling, it learns to fly. And there are some others, you know, who are more considerate perhaps, and who are at the distance, but they still, they don't lend a helping hand. But they're just there in case of emergency. And there are some who are not there at all. They just want to come back and see only when it's flying. So I think that is what...
In this case, I've heard Swami narrates this beautiful story of a lady devotee who came to him. Said, Swami, I'm going through so much of difficulties, so much of sufferings, I will not be able to sustain this, I will die. Then Swami laughs at her and he says, you're still alive, no? And then he says, see, does God not know your,
threshold point?
He will never give you problems which can cross your threshold.
In fact, our registrar, sir, often used to give us, tell us this, that if Bhagwan gives us a challenge, he also knows that you are capable and he also gives you the strength to overcome the challenge. Else Bhagwan wouldn't have, because oftentimes I remember when we had a big dignitary coming down to Parthi and Bhagwan gave us 3 days, you know, to put up a drama. You know, Bhagwan wanted the quality of the drama to be extremely high. And we were used to having a 20-day buffer, you know, for all recording and sound costumes and, you know, composing songs and etc., etc. And we thought 3 days is impossible. And I remember it was at that time that a registrar said that he has given you 3 days means he also gives you the energy to do it in 3 days. And needless to say, it did happen.
Fantastic. I think all of us have experienced this with Bhagwan. I think various facets of this reaction, reflection and resound in the life of Bhagwan, in the personality of Bhagwan. And another very powerful incident comes to my mind. This happened with a brother who had two of his brothers who were studying in Bhagwan's institution at the same time. So one day Bhagwan comes inside the bhajan hall and one of them is sitting in the front and Swami asks him, "Where is your brother? How many brothers do you have?" So this brother gets up and immediately what comes to his mind is his brother who is sitting at the end of the bhajan hall. So he points towards him and Swami says, "Chi, that is not the right answer. You should say all are brothers, all are my brothers." And then Bhagwan moves forward. In the middle of the bhajan hall, another brother is sitting. So Swami asks him, "How many brothers do you have?" And this brother who had noticed what had happened before felt smart and he said, "Swami, all are my brothers." Swami said, "Urke, stunt." Just stunt. You're simply saying, you don't mean it. And Bhagwan moved further. Now he came to the end of the bhajan hall and the eldest brother was sitting there. And then Swami asked him, "How many brothers do you have?" And he said, "Swami, all are my brothers." Swami said, "Tisko, take namaskar." So each person, you look at the answer the second person gave and look at the answer the third person gave. It's the same answer, but how Bhagwan reacted.
Does it mean Bhagwan, the inner intention and feeling matters?
Yes. So it's all about reaction, reflection and resound. What we get in life is how we think of it internally, how we project. And Bhagwan gave us ample instances. I think each one of us has any number of instances and we are so fortunate to get this directly from Bhagwan.
Fine, I think this gives us a pretty good framework to understand the law of karma, though we can never say we have understood it in toto. So one point is, we do not take it in a bitter way. It is justice done in the highest sense. It is fair. The only problem why this suspense remains is because of the time lag and because of the non-sequential mode in which the action reaction
comes. The delayed effect.
The delayed effect with, you know, you never know the time lag. And of course, we must be convinced that God knows our abilities, our threshold levels, and He would never give us something which can cross that. And in the ultimate sense, it's all for our good.
So dear listeners, that was the first part of Radio Sai Study Circle session, reflecting on these three words, reaction, reflection, resound. And we'll continue this in future episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. We will try to get more insights into these three words that Bhagwan used in many of his discourses. And in the future, the second episode of this study circle session, we will go on and ruminate on how does this law of karma operate, some more examples, some more insights that Bhagwan himself has given. And we will take instances from our scriptures and also from various other scriptural texts and our epics and try to understand how we can transcend this law. Yes, we know this law of karma operates. Whatever we do will come back to us. But can we overcome this? And how can we overcome this? And what are the easier ways to circumvent this? We will go into all these details because Bhagwan has given answers to each of these questions and with amazing examples and really very, very simple way of understanding this most complex subject of law of karma, of reaction, reflection, resound. So in the future episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, we will listen to the second part of this Radio Sai Study Circle session. And if you reflect on what was being discussed, you know, everything comes back to Swami's message and Bhagwan's life. That is why once during the world conference when people asked Swami, please give us some message. This was the first world conference in Mumbai and they asked Swami, please give us a message. And all Swami said was, my life is my message. And the Avatar Declaration Day happened just last Sunday. And now from October 20th, we have 1 month till November 20th and just 3 more days. And it is Swami's birthday. We have this 33 days. Already 3-4 days have passed. So from today, today is 24th. So from October 24th till November 23rd, we have this 1 month and we can spend this 1 month just ruminating on Bhagwan's dictum, my life is my message. He declared his avatarhood and in October as a precursor to his birthday. You know, Swami has given us this 1 month to ruminate on his life, on his teachings, on his message. And if we ponder on this, this is a golden opportunity. This 1 month can be our Ramzan month to ruminate on Bhagwan's teachings, to purify ourselves. In fact, if you have not watched, you can watch a video conversation that we did with Mr. Ajit Popat in the studios just 1 day prior to Bhagwan's Avatar Declaration Day. And it's a very powerful conversation where Mr. Ajit Popat shares his interactions with Bhagwan and urges us to utilize this 1 month in the most profound way, in the most purifying way. So I urge you to visit radiosai.org and listen to this conversation. We have put the first part and we are going to upload the second part too. And this is something which will help you how to make best use of this 1 month period as we herald Bhagwan's birthday. In 1940, Bhagwan declared his avatarhood, but in 1947, I was telling you, Swami started giving his discourses, and it is at that time that Bhagwan wrote that landmark letter to his brother, Shesh Maharaju, where he clearly laid down who is he, what is his work, and who are his devotees. And there Bhagwan very clearly says that my task, my mission is only one, to protect and fill all with ananda, with bliss. And he then goes on to say that to achieve this, I have taken a vow, and that vow is to catch and rescue those who stray away from the path of dharma. And then he moves on to say what he likes the most, even though this is the task and he has a vow. He says, what I really like is to alleviate the suffering of the poor and needy, to remove poverty and paucity of any nature. And then Bhagwan says, there is one thing that I cherish, an achievement that I am proud of. And he says, that is, whoever worships me or whoever adores me, I rescue them. And then Bhagwan goes on to say the fifth declaration in that letter, where Swami says that just because I rescue someone, he or she should not automatically think that he or she became my devotee. No, no, no. If you have to become my devotee, you have to treat pain and pleasure, trial and triumph, pain and gain with equal mindedness. Swami says only that person who is equanimous, no matter what he meets in life, is my true devotee. And to such a devotee, I attach myself, Swami says. I never give up. I never forsake such devotees. They are my true devotees. And if you look at all these declarations that Swami made in that letter, which was written to Shesh Maharaju, but Swami began that letter by saying that this is addressed to all who are devoted to me. So it is addressed to each one of us, to you, me, to everyone. And if we want to become his devotee, we know what we have to do. And if we want to participate in his mission, we know what we have to do. Swami says his mission is to protect and fill all with ananda. if we have to participate in His mission, we have to spread happiness. We have to fill the other person with joy. If we want to do the work that Bhagwan likes, then Swami very clearly says, what I like the most is to alleviate the suffering of the poor and needy. If we want to do what Swami likes, then we have to go out and serve. We have to ameliorate the suffering of our neighbor, of that person living in the slum, of that person who does not have food to eat during the entire month. And if there's anything that we want to ever cherish in our lives, we have to cherish only that moment when we reached out and helped someone who was in need. And if we do all this, we become His devotee. And when we become such a devotee, we get attached to Him. Swami said He attaches Himself to us. We do not have to go looking for Him. He will seek us out. He will seek us out. And He will be with us. And how wonderful our life would become if God is always with us, in us, around us, surrounding us, enveloping us with His presence and His love. Life would just become blissful. There would be nothing ever wanting in your heart. It would be a life that is filled every moment with completeness, with fulfillment, with bliss. And Swami has told us how to achieve this. So let's make use of this 1 month in sanctifying our life, and let us become something new, something wholly different. Let us offer a different person of ourselves to Bhagwan on His birthday as we celebrate that beautiful day, celebrating His advent, His glorious advent onto this earth, His glorious entry into our lives. So with these thoughts, dear listeners, let me leave you. It is already time. It's 9:47. I'm Team Radio as Bishu, and in a few moments from now, you will listen to a drama presented by children from Sathya Sai schools on 3rd September 2010. It's entitled Sai Vidya, Sarasavidya. This was presented in front of Bhagwan just in September 2010. So do enjoy this program and do ruminate on everything that you have heard today during this entire Thursday live broadcast. Let us spend every moment in His contemplation. I'm so grateful to Bhagwan for giving us this chance to ruminate on His teachings and to reflect on His life and His message. And to all of you, dear listeners, for being with us, for writing to us, for your encouraging words, and for always propelling us to spend our lives in His service. Every single moment, every single week, every single month, every single year. Thank you so much. And if ever, if you have anything to say to us, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. With this, sweet good night and a loving sign-off from all of us at Radio Sai. Thank you so much.